are. It's 16 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. This is Friday's Volcania Radio. As I said, in association with DavidIke.com, my next guest is waiting patiently to chat with us. He is the proprietor of checktheevidence.co.uk. He's a former software engineer and a university lecturer. He's a teacher, and he set up the website and began looking into these issues after September the 11th, and I can quote him. He's married, he says, and he has two children who are now 14 and 16. They both now know that the terrorists turned to dust on 9/11 and that this was not caused by Al-Qaeda or terrorists flying planes. They know the difference also between chemtrails and contrails. It's been a couple of years since we last spoke, so I'm really looking forward to chatting again with Andrew Johnson. Andrew, welcome back to, well, at least to my radio show anyway. Good to have you on.
Oh, thanks for inviting me on, Richie.
No, nice to be here. Brilliant. What have you made of Russell Brand's, now you might not have caught it, but he gave an interview to Evan Davis on Newsnight. And when challenged about an alleged passage in his new, it's not his autobiography, he's written a book on politics and on socialism and Marxism and stuff. When challenged on something that he said, I don't know what he said in the book, which is funny, he clammed up and said he didn't want to talk about ridiculous conspiracy theories. What do you make of that?
Well, I didn't see the actual interview, so I'm not a good person to ask about it. I did see the interview he gave probably now 4 or 5 months ago, the one with Jeremy Paxman, and that was, I thought, rather a peculiar interview. But this recent one I have not really seen. It seems, I mean, my impression of what Russell Brand is doing is I think he's not been totally honest, and, you know, from bits and pieces that I've seen, he does appear to be something of a, you know, a magnet for people who are disaffected with the way that the political system is working. And, you know, he can then attract those people to various groups, and, you know, their opinion can be shaped and managed through people like him, I think. And, you know, I mean, I don't know if you've seen the very peculiar picture of him with Katy Perry, where he's holding a pendant, and on this pendant, or it's either a pendant or a little kind of, it's not exactly a medallion, it's like a little plate, and he's holding it, and written on that is the word obey.
Yeah, no, he'd probably say in his defence that he's being ironic, maybe.
It is possible. I mean, you know, there are often other explanations for these things. But I mean, I'm, you know, having looked at some of the symbolism that's flying about the place, and you know, you look at the latest Katy Perry video, one of the latest with all the Egypt symbology in it, and you know, it's all very, very peculiar and rather, to me, rather disturbing actually. And Russell Brand does not give me a warm glow.
No, me neither. I mean, again, he's not here to defend himself. He promised to come on a television show that I was involved in back in London earlier in the year to talk about his activism. He was given a friendly invite because he'd met David Icke a couple of times, and he was very keen to, at one time, associate himself with David's work. Not necessarily with David's work, but with the fact that David was doing stuff, was asking questions and stuff like that. But then he went very cold on coming on the show. And I'm very honest in saying that because I believe in being honest. I don't want anybody to think that my criticism of Russell has got anything to do with the fact that he didn't come on the show. I swear on all that's sacred, it's got nothing to do with that. I didn't fancy him before that. And to be honest, I was planning on asking him the question on the show anyway. Are you for real, Russell? You know, is this genuine or is this a career move? Was what I was going to ask him. But to be fair to him, during the Davis interview, there were times when he was trying to raise points about, you know, austerity and what it's doing to people, the misery that people are feeling, how the disabled are getting treated and how they get absolutely shafted by the measures of the Cameron and, the Lib Lab coalition here. So there are times when you kind of want to believe that the guy is genuine and he's shooting from the hip and he's shooting from the heart. But then when he's asked that question about 9/11, he's obviously written something in his book. All he had to do was turn around to Evan Davis and say, well, Evan, there are 2,200 architects and engineers eminently qualified men and women who think it's a load of nonsense. That's all he had to say.
Oh, well, I would never have advised him to say that because, quite frankly, the architects and engineers, that's a load of nonsense, that site, as far as I've been able to tell. And it's run by a complete liar. So, you know, I certainly wouldn't bring that up in relation to 9/11.
Why do you say that about Richard Gates?
Well, I'll come on to that in a moment. But before we do that, I mean, the simplest thing to say, which avoids a lot of the problems, is, you know, say to somebody like Evan Davis, Evan, go and watch the videos. The towers turn to dust. They turn to dust before they hit the ground. And that's all I'm going to say about it. And then just leave it at that and, you know, go on to the next thing. Because you're not going to get much of a chance with somebody like Evan Davis or on the BBC mainstream. And, of course, that very statement that the buildings turn to dust before they hit the ground disproves most of what the Architects and Engineers group promote. And that's the huge problem with that group, that they will not talk about the evidence. And the evidence that they claim proves what happened was not submitted by them in a court case.
No, but they're sincere in their beliefs. And
I don't think they are.
I'll tell you why, Andrew. Let me jump in.
I'll let you tell me why I think after you've made your point.
Exactly. I'll make my point and then you can make yours on it. One of the things that comes to us, I've been in the alternative media for a few years now.
Sure.
And one of the things that we get from listeners, this is genuine, I'm not making this up, is listeners can't understand the vitriol that exists in the so-called truth community. I'm not talking about you now. I'm not talking about you specifically.
I understand.
And how men and women who fundamentally believe in the same answer can't agree on the mathematics that get you to that answer, basically. And that's okay, because the answer is that September the 11th didn't happen the way the 9/11 Commission report said it did. Didn't happen the way George Bush said it did. Didn't happen the way Tony Blair said it. We all know that. How it happened then really doesn't matter, some people say.
Oh, cool, right, okay.
Right?
Okay.
Because we could be arrogant, because Gage is an academic, you're a smart man, you are an academic.
Shall we talk about that a little bit more?
Go on.
Because you have raised a key point. People have said to me it doesn't really matter how it happened. Well, actually it does. And let me give you an example of this. It's kind of a ridiculous example, but I think it's valid. You know, you and I can agree that the official story of 9/11 is false.
Yes.
Right? So, you know, we can agree on that. We can move forward on that. But if I was to say to you that President Putin, you know, planted nuclear devices in the towers, you know, and it blew them up, then, you know, and I was to try and go forward with that as an explanation, then, you know, you would say, well, how do you, you know, how do you explain that? What's your evidence? And if you weren't doing that, then I could just make up any old story and go forward with that. But if that became, you know, put into a court case or something, then smarter people than me and you, because there are smarter people than me and you who would be brought to bear on the case, could disprove it if we weren't telling the truth, right? So take, for example, somebody like Mr. Gage, who has claimed on repeated occasions that the research that's been done by, you know, my friend, Dr. Judy Wood, and was submitted in a court case in 2007, you know, and also put forward in an appeal case and so on, he has said that she ignores certain evidence. For example, he has said publicly on multiple occasions that she ignores evidence of bombs. She ignores evidence of thermite. You know, I've got a little article about this on my website, which I suggest people go and read because it's quite key. I can prove to people that Richard Gage has a copy of Dr. Judy Wood's book because I have a copy of the check that was signed by him with his signature on it, and it was that book was bought using Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth funds, because that's what it says on the check. And I have a picture of the contents page of that book in which it lists thermite, bombs, nukes, mini nukes. So in other words, all the evidence that Richard Gage is going around saying that Dr. Wood ignores, she does not ignore. It's in her book, and she explains why it doesn't explain what actually happened to the towers. So clearly and simply, that is a lie. And if you have somebody who is going around running a 9/11 truth group and doing 30-day tours in Canada and other places, and he is actually lying about the matter of 9/11 research, then to me that is a person that, that cannot be trusted.
Right, let and me I, back in on that. Then let me back in
hang on.
That.
Let me just make one more.
Come
point.
On, you've made it. You've had a good. Hang on now, Andrew. Point. You've had a good 90 seconds there. Let me jump in now. Make it briefly, then, please.
Yes,
make
it briefly. Thank you. And I have other evidence based on what other people have written to me, and that's all on my website, and it's in my free book. You know, and this shows that this guy is not into knowing the truth about what happened.
Right. Now, he's not here to defend himself. Anyway, no. Richard Gage, right? I like Richard Gage. I like Judy Wood. I've interviewed Judy Wood in the past. And I like you. I've interviewed you in the past as well. I didn't want to get into he said, she said, he did, she this, did thing. Because okay, there's no point to that.
That's not what I'm doing. I've got the evidence. It's not a question of what he said. It's actually what he's done. I've got the evidence of that on my website. You can see it. So that's the difference.
Can you not understand why so many people who listen to this program, yes, who listen to yes, Alex and other programs, yes, why it drives them mad when,
yes, I can
when Jim Fetzer, who's a smart guy, you're a smart guy, Judy Wood,
yes,
is obviously a bright woman, Richard Gage is a smart guy. All of us believe that ultimately the official story is nonsense. And this does no good whatsoever to getting more and more people to look at that evidence.
Let's try and explain that, shall we? Because we're often accused of creating infighting or, you know, whatever.
I'm not accusing you of that.
No, I know you're not. I'm not saying you're accusing me of anything. I'm not saying that you're, you know, accusing me of anything at all. But other people have done this. And this is also, I've written about this on my website at some length if people want to go and read it. The problem is, you know, we do all want to get to the truth. But it's quite clear to me that certain people are in the way of that process. And I can tell you the reason for that. The thing that has to be covered up with 9/11 is the connection between 9/11 and energy, right? That's one of the key connections that has to be covered up. And I have evidence in spades that this is true, not only from the physical evidence that Dr. Wood has compiled and submitted in a court case in 2007, and I also submitted an affidavit in that court case because I knew that it was true, and I was prepared to go to court and tell people what I knew was true about that case. And Richard Gage hasn't done that. Jim Fetzer hasn't done that. Stephen E. Jones hasn't done that. So whatever you might think of me as a person or them as a person, you know, the basic thing, we all know the phrase, actions speak louder than words, okay? So that's what it boils down to. And just to give you a summary of the energy connection, the phenomena that's in the evidence at the World Trade Center show, for example, that the buildings turn to dust before they even reach the ground.
From the top down, basically, yeah.
About 85%. So if you think about this very logically, you can see it in the videos, right? So everyone can watch the videos again. You can actually see this happening, right? You don't need to watch Dr. Wood's presentations if you think, you know, she's putting false information in them or something, as we're sometimes accused of. You can watch any of the videos from the news channels. They all show the same thing, right? So that's the first thing. The buildings turn to dust before they hit the ground. That's the truth, right? So character assassinations, characterizations, you know, whoever's been paid, who's an op or not, isn't being paid, or what, that doesn't come into it. The basic evidence is the towers turn to dust before they hit the ground, right? And that's proved by the videos. It's proved by the seismic evidence. It's essentially proved by the relatively low noise that was there. And you can hear the lack of noise if you listen to the videos. Commensurate with the event itself, there was very little noise, okay? So then you move on to what's the destructive mechanism? How did those buildings turn to dust? Now, any destructive mechanism, right, that involves cutting the building into pieces, such as putting explosives in to break up the substructure, right, that would mean that those pieces, however they were broken, would fall to the ground. So you would have had a seismic signature commensurate with the volume of material that was in the building. The seismic signature was not commensurate with the volume of material that hit the ground. So the seismic signature shows that the buildings didn't hit the ground. You go and look at the bathtub, which was the large slurry wall which the towers were built inside, right? And that was barely damaged by the destruction of the towers. And you've got the mall stores underneath, the goods in there survived. The PATH trains were only slightly damaged. So all the evidence, and there's more, it's all in Dr. Wood's book. It's in the presentations that she and I have done. It's all there. And that proves that the buildings didn't hit the ground in solid form. So any explanation that, you know, ends up with the buildings being cut into chunks is the wrong explanation.
Yeah, right? There's no doubt about that. There was no evidence of large, huge, big lumps of concrete. There weren't, as you quite rightly said. That's right. They just evaporated.
It didn't evaporate because that implies heat. It turned to dust.
No, it turned to dust, yeah. Disintegrated is probably a better word.
So this evidence, once you study it enough, is irrefutable, basically. You cannot, if you're going to want the truth, you cannot disagree with it. So then you end up with somebody like me and Dr. Wood putting this out to people and showing people, and then you end up with people like Stephen E. Jones and Richard Gage say, no, that's not what happened. It was thermite. Well, it can't have been thermite because what thermite does, the normal thermite will melt through the steel, right? Which again is cutting the steel into chunks, right? So those chunks would then fall to the ground at some point. And then they'll say, well, it was nanothermite, which is an explosive. Again, the explosives cut the pieces into chunks and they fall to the ground. So you're still going to get the seismic effects. So it's very easy to demonstrate. And Dr. Wood is a scientist. Richard Gage is not a scientist. He's an architect. He doesn't have the training and experience and materials that Dr. Wood has. And I'm not trying to play the credentialism game here, but it is important, nevertheless, to consider the relative experience and, again, what people have done, you know, with the evidence.
Yeah. Let's move on from this because, your point is well made.
Thank you.
I just wish that... That debate would be, and again, I'm not accusing you or Judy Wood or anybody else. I think everybody has a responsibility. That debate over which evidence is relevant, which isn't, should definitely be more cordial because we all want the same thing anyway, which is the lunatics behind that are eventually brought to justice for it, and we never see anything like it ever again. What we love, Andrew, to do on a Friday specifically, and I mean, I look at your website, checktheevidence.co.uk. regularly, there's some fantastic stuff on there, great articles, really interesting information for people, and I recommend people get on there. I love, because it's a new area of interest to me in the last couple of years, I love anything to do with the origins of mankind, where we came from, where we may have been in the past. And I know you're very interested in evidence that exists that suggests that at one time not only was there life on Mars, but we might have been on Mars at one time or another. And when I mentioned this today, I got a number of tweets and a number of Facebook messages saying, brilliant, Richie, get into that. Love that subject. When did you get into it, Mars and ancient civilizations?
Well, it was essentially probably around about 2004, maybe slightly earlier, because I started to investigate the whole sort of UFO ET issue a bit more, which I've had a lifelong interest in, really. I had a sighting of an object when I was about 9 years old, which I knew wasn't a star or anything like that. And so I started to look at some of the rover pictures, and I think originally I came across a couple of people. Richard Hoagland was one, of course, as he's posted a lot of stuff about this. And there was a chap called Jason Martell. And I think the thing that most intrigued me was this picture of the dome. And I think if I give people the image number, because I can just about remember it. Oh, crikey. See if I can remember it.
Take your time. We got plenty of time.
Okay, I'm just seeing if it's...
I'm looking for it here while I'm talking to you now. That's the beauty of doing radio these days. Technology is brilliant.
if you just put in something like Mars Dome, and it's the image reference is M0150-1228. If you put that number into Google image search, it will come up with a picture of a dome on Mars. You get a lot of other pictures as well, but the first one I've got is a dome on Mars. And this picture was taken by Mars Global Surveyor. I think I always get the date wrong, but you can easily find the date that it was taken. It was taken in 1999, I think, or 2001. And let me just see if I could send you a link to this. Let's see, MGS. If I do that. Oh, crikey, why is that not coming up? 150.
So when was this image taken then, Andrew?
This was taken, I think, in 90. I'm just going to get the image data up. I've got the page for it here, which is on the USGS website. I'll send you the link here on Skype so you can just click on it so you get the actual, you know, and I always try and go back to the source data from either NASA or MSSS, which is Malian Space Science Systems, or somewhere like that. Because you get a lot of YouTube videos, you know, with all kinds of Mars stuff with animals and various rock formations and things like this. But this to me is one of the clearest anomalous images from the Mars sort of data set, if you will. And I use this as an avatar. And I came across this image, as I say, I think it was on Jason Martell's website or something in about 2004. And I'll give you the newer version of this as well. And I'll prove to you that, that there has been a cover-up of this image. I'll see if I can get that image up. And I can give people another URL where I've got like a summary of some of these images. And you could see to me some of the most interesting Mars anomaly images that I've come across. And you can you should be able to go back and find the original, you know, basically the original NASA and USGS images that you can look at. And I'd encourage you to look at these for yourself. Try not to go onto any websites at first. Just try and go to the original images, you know, so that you don't kind of get, you know, you don't get somebody else's opinion first. Just form your own opinion first and see what you think. Now, If you go on to this, I think this is quite slow to come up, but if you go on to, yeah, that is, that's actually the, where it comes from. I'm just going to go back a step.
I've just had a look at the picture. I've just actually posted that picture on our Facebook page now.
Right.
It is an extraordinary picture. It's an extraordinary image. Remind us again, anybody just joining in. First of all, Andrew Johnson is with me. Checktheevidence.co.uk. We've been talking about 9/11 and energy weapons and stuff. It's been great. But we're talking now about Mars and evidence that there may once have been civilizations on Mars. Andrew's just give me a look at a picture. I've just put it on our Facebook page. Get on to Volcania Radio on Facebook to see the picture. And this was taken by the Viking.
No, it was the Mars Global Surveyor Probe.
All right, the Global Surveyor Probe. Okay.
Yeah, which went up, I think, in 97. I forget the exact date it went up. So that particular image was it was taken again. If I can find the right browse page, I haven't got the browse page. I'll have to get from a PowerPoint file. And that was they had a new probe went up in, I think, about 2007 or 2008, and that was called Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter, and that took a high resolution image. And I'm just going to try and get the exact URL so you can see what I would argue is essentially a cover up. Of this image, which I think it means it must be, you know, basically must be an interesting image that they're, because they're not wanting people to, you know, to look at it too much. So let's just see if I can go back to that one. No, not that one. Okay.
And that's what essentially got you interested in it then, was this
dome
image.
This dome image. I thought, well, what, and I ended up writing to some geologist because I thought, well, you know, I thought somebody's got to have looked at this, you know, and I showed this to my brother and he asked me the same question and said, hasn't anybody looked at this dome?
Yeah.
Explanation. And I wrote to 42 geologists. This was back in 2004, so that's 10 years ago. And, you know, they basically, only three of them responded. And one of them ended up saying, oh, well, I've seen this image floating around on UFO conspiracy websites, you know. And I don't think there's a big conspiracy to cover up images that are on Mars, you know. And that wasn't what I asked him. You know, I says, well, look, what's the explanation, man? You know, have you got you're a geologist and I'm not. What's your explanation? And he didn't have one, basically. So I was a bit disappointed by that, as you can imagine.
Can you deduce, Andrew, by the size of big is it then?
That crater is about 530 yards across. It's about 500 meters. That image, the older image, is it's I think 7 meters per pixel. So if you count the pixels, you know, it works out at, well, whatever it is, it's something like, 300 pixels or something. So it's about, it's probably less than that. It's probably about 150 pixels or something. So it works out at 530 meters or something. Anyway, you can work it out from the web.
Yeah, it's amazing. Now that obviously that photograph then, that sparks an interest. So you start looking into more photographs and stuff. What else, did you find when you looked into it that made you more and more convinced that there were civilizations? What's the hard evidence there?
Well, the other thing that I found it most peculiar was something that was highlighted by David Percy. And he's actually written a book about this, which I confess I haven't read. And I think it's called Two Thirds. And there may be, you may have more knowledgeable listeners that have read it. But I made a little animation here from the images that are on his website, which is called allis.com. And, you can click on that image. And basically, to describe it, what that image is it's an image of a portion of an image from Cydonia, which is a region on Mars. I forget the exact exactly where it is on Mars, but again, you can Google for that. But then you can overlay that image with a Google satellite view or a Google aerial view of Avery, and there are three features on the landscape which are overlaid and match on each image. There's a circular feature, and then Silbury Hill, and then there's some kind of mound with some trees around it in Avery. That matches with a mound on Cydonia. So this is really quite extraordinary, because you have three features on the landscape. They match pretty much perfectly. So how can this be? How can you have something matching both on Avery and on Cydonia on Mars? This is crazy. I mean, to me, it means that there's a story that we're not being told, and I haven't seen a good explanation for why these features should match. And furthermore, somebody else has told me that if you match these, if you go into, study these images in even more detail, there's 1,000 points of correspondence. Now, I haven't studied it to that level, because I kind of just left it at this, basically. And I do think that there is some connection of some kind of civilization on Mars to the one here on Earth. Other people will, go on to claim that there are pyramids on Mars. I've seen one or two interesting images, particularly one from Pathfinder, which I put into a presentation. That, again, I think came from Mike Barra's an article which was originally written by Mike Barra, I think in about 2002 or something. And it was posted on Richard Hoagland's website.
Yeah, Richard is a good friend of ours. He's been on the show. He's been on my shows over the years plenty of times. Extraordinary man, Richard, yeah.
Well, he has put out a lot of very interesting pictures. I have some doubts about some of it, but certainly images like this have really caught my attention. And so there's this. And, I don't know if you want – there's another example which I've put on this website, which has all the list on. One I came across recently, I sort of collected a few together on that Check the Evidence webpage. But this particular one, let me just see if I can give you the two links.
I have to say the similar features photographs are really remarkable.
They are. And this it's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's incredible.
What do I know about geology? I know nothing about it, but I'm not an idiot either. I mean, they look incredibly similar.
Yes, indeed. Indeed.
Almost like you're hinting at, almost like they were designed to look like that.
Yes.
And then
yes.
You're into a whole different area then of, well, who designed them?
Well, that's it. And this is something we don't know. Now, this particular image, let's see if that's the right one. Yeah. I sent you the link there. Now, that's to a blog that somebody's done. And that's a famous structure at Kofun in Japan. And you can look at this on – I looked at this on Google Earth, but this is a slightly different picture from a slightly different angle, I think. It may have even come off Google Earth. But you can look at that structure, right? And so that's definitely in Japan. Anyone can go and check that out on Google Earth, or they can even go there if they've got the money. And then now I'll try and find the other image of that, just to see if this is the right one.
Yeah, we're talking about images, and this is radio. I just want to say to the listeners, I've linked to one or two of these images already on Facebook. To see them, get on to checktheevidence.co.uk and make your own mind up. Some of these things are amazing. I got to say, this Kofun, this megastructure in Japan, first I heard of it now, looking at this.
Right. You said I'd never heard of it.
Yeah.
So that picture is Japan, right? So now have a look at this one, which is from Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter. And you'll see this is from, it says static.ua high rise. Now, high rise is the high resolution camera. I think it's something like high resolution imaging system or something. I can't remember what the E stands for. But again, you can find out what all these acronyms mean on the various websites. So again, you look at the similarity of that structure, which is obviously meant to be just a random pile of rocks on Mars. I mean, what are the chances of getting that sort of resemblance to this structure in Japan?
I tell you what, you could knock me down with a feather now. Because I've got both images, and again, this is radio. It's very unusual what we're doing here. This is normally something you do on television, not sure. Radio. But this is amazing. I'm looking at the image from Mars, and I'm looking at the image, the Google Earth rendition, I suppose, of the megastructure in Kofun, and that's worth investigating that because they're virtually identical.
Absolutely, yeah. This is it. You know, you can see from the sort of shape of it that there is a similarity here. I mean, you know, this, of course, doesn't actually prove.
No, it doesn't. No. But I just got to say, if you're just tuning into this, what we're actually talking about is an image of a megastructure in Japan on planet Earth, obviously, and an image of a rock formation in Mars, which is virtually identical to the one in Japan. And this is the first I've heard of it. I'm amazed.
Yeah,
I really am.
Yeah, I just picked it up on some blog. Somebody might have even sent it to me. I can't really claim any credit for finding these images myself. You know, I haven't got this sort of time, but obviously I added it to the page of these anomalies. And I think the most frustrating thing for me, you know, I mean, I am from a science background. I shouldn't really say that. I'm from an engineering background, and I did, you know, part of my degree was physics, so I have got that sort of experience in science or doing some, you know, sort of basic science, I suppose you'd say. But, you know, we pay NASA, or NASA is paid and ESA is paid, you know, millions of pounds or millions of dollars to get these images from these probes. And there's, you know, an enormous amount of ingenuity and technical expertise goes into developing the computer systems, the imaging systems, the rocketry systems, you know, the electronics, all of this, you know. And yet when we actually come to getting the most interesting data, such as what we're looking at now, I would argue, is this is the most interesting data which we have from these images. They just ignore it. They don't do anything with it. They don't talk about it. They just
it's taboo. It's taboo. There's no doubt about it. It's a taboo subject.
Right, right, right.
Yeah.
So, you know, and it's like the whole thing with water as well. They've tried to claim for years that Mars is, you know, there's no water on it and stuff. But even in some of the images, you know, and I could probably dig out one or two of those, you can clearly see the evidence for liquid water on Mars, both from the, you know, from the orbiting probes, you can see it. And from the rovers on the ground, you can see the evidence for like mud and, you know, little smears in the ground and this sort of thing. You can clearly see this. And yet they're still sort of umming and ahhing about this idea of there being liquid water on Mars when we've already got the pictures which show it.
Yeah.
And it was pointed out to me. I don't know whether it's true of the latest one, which is called Curiosity, which landed a couple of years ago, and that's still going. But the ones that went up in 2004, they didn't have any water detectors on them. Which is, you know, which is ridiculous, because I always tell the story that when I was about 12 or 13, you know, my brother was very interested in electronics, and he used to fix televisions. You know, we're going back sort of 35 years or so now, but he used to fix TVs then, and we used to get electronics magazines, and we used to build little kits, and he built me a little water detector just as a bit of fun, you know, and it was a little speaker connected to a little circuit and a little bit of circuit board, and you dip the circuit board in some water and an alarm would go off, you know.
Yeah.
And this thing would cost about £5 or something, you know. And even now, it probably cost about 50 pence for a little chip that does that. Yet they don't have one on these rovers. They don't have a water detecting circuit. I mean, this is just crazy, you know.
Yeah, that gives, for me, there's no excuse for that. Why you wouldn't put something that could detect water? It's one of the first things you'd want to know. I've just had a tweet in from Buzz Tenzin. How you doing, Buzz? He says, PIA. My phonetic alphabet is terrible, so we'll say Paul Indigo Alpha, Papa Indigo Alpha, 10214 is the number of a Mars photo that has many amazing artificial things in it, he says. And somebody called A. Basilago or Basiago searched it. And we should share that. Papa Indigo Alpha 10214. Yeah. I can't bring it up here now, so I can't see it. What's in that then, Andrew? What's in that picture?
Well, that appears, this is an unusual picture. This was discussed quite extensively. I mean, this picture even got into the Daily Mail, you know, the good old Daily Mail. And
that bastion of journalism.
That absolute bastion of journalism, indeed. And, so this particular picture shows what appears to be a little figure. You've got to zoom into it quite a lot. I've actually got the original image there. And Andrew Basiago, well, we'll talk about him in a minute, perhaps, but it appears to show a little figure with its arm held out. That's, I've given you the link to the full one, but I'll try and get you the link to the zoomed in portion, because this is just on a forum that you'll see it. But you'll see the image in this forum posting quite clearly. And it's got a circle around it. It's like a figure holding an arm out. But I think I don't know what it is. It doesn't really look like a rock formation due to the very thin kind of thing that's held out. But I don't think it's a figure. I think if you work out where it is on the photograph and the distance it is from the camera, I understand, if our memory serves me correctly, it's only about 3 inches high or 6 inches high or something. So it's not as tall as a human being. So again, we're left with the same question. What is it? We don't really know what it is. It's to my understanding from the angle of the camera, as I said, it's not a human-sized figure. It's only a small figure, but is it some kind of plant? Is it some kind of twig that's left over?
Very unusual. I've just put that image on our Facebook page. It actually doesn't come up on the page, the image, so you've got to click on the link. And it's bizarre, that, isn't it? I mean, yes, I'm looking at it, and to me, it looks like a statue.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it does. Yeah, it looks like something you'd see in the Acropolis or something. But it almost looks like somebody's holding a spear or something. What an amazing image that is.
Yeah, it is. I mean, but, you know, it is.
What took that Pathfinder, was it?
That was, I think. What,
a rover, was it?
It was Spirit or Opportunity. We've had four rovers now. I'm getting, there's a Phoenix lander as well, which landed at the poles, but that didn't go anywhere. It just landed and then stopped. But we've had the Pathfinder rover, which was in 1997. We've had the Spirit and Opportunity, which were a twin rovers. They were launched and landed. Well, they landed on Mars, in 2004. And then we had the Curiosity rover, which landed in 2012. Now, of course, quite a number of people have sort of picked me up because I've got a whole presentation about, you know, the faked Apollo missions. And so they've said to me, well, Andrew, if you think that the Apollo missions were faked, then aren't the rover missions faked as well? And there's some people that would contend that the rovers aren't actually on Mars. They're actually in a remote region of the Earth. And there are a couple of candidates for that. One is the Atacama Desert. And the other is a place called Devon Island, which is the largest uninhabited island on Earth. And it's about, I think it's about 300 kilometres or 300 miles long. It's in northern Canada.
And it's barren, is it? It's barren.
And it's just
and
about
rain
barren. Yeah. And there's one or two of these people, you see, that have found, allegedly, I haven't got the URL to hand, but if you put something like Mars Lemming into Google, you'll find this, allegedly, this image of which, and it does actually look, you know, quite a bit like a lemming that's on the ground. And I think it's, again, it's roughly the right size. So, you know, if people are of the mind, as I am, that the Apollo missions could not have landed, you know, and done the things that they said they'd done in 1969 and up to,
I'll tell you what, Andrew, it's amazing stuff. I'm absolutely devastated that we're out of time because we're about to finish up. But we'll definitely talk again on these issues, you and I. It was great to reconnect with you again after a long gap. The website to check out Andrew on is quite simply checktheevidence.co.uk, and there's a wide range of interest there from September 11th, which we spoke about earlier briefly, to this, you know, to ancient civilizations and Mars and more as well. Terrific stuff. Thanks for coming on, Andrew. Enjoyed it, and please come back again.
Will do. Thanks very much, Richie.
Great stuff. Andrew Johnson there on the line to us from his home in Yorkshire. kind of brings the program to the end then. What a shame that is. I was really enjoying that. I've posted some of those images on Volcania's Facebook page. So do get on there and have a look at them. And then if you go onto Andrew's website, you'll be able to see more of them as well. Extraordinary images they are indeed. That's it for the program. One or two people lamenting the fact they missed Robert Fisk. You didn't miss him. Robert was trying to pre-record an interview with me earlier on today from the Syrian embassy in Saudi Arabia and couldn't do it because of the line. Wanted to do it, but we couldn't. The line was terrible. So we're going to do it on Monday. So he'll be on the program on Monday evening, Will Robert Fisk, as well as William Engdahl. Can't wait to talk to him on Monday. I will see some of you at Wembley Arena tomorrow for David Icke's extraordinary day. Can't wait for that. Really will be amazing. Still just about a ticket or two available on davidicke.com/tickets. I look forward to seeing you there. I really do. If I'm well enough, I will be well enough. Don't worry about that. In the meantime, thanks to Aaron Callan, thanks to Laura LaRue, and thanks to you for listening. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. It's only the beginning of the weekend. Enjoy the weekend, and we'll talk live on Monday at 8 p.m. Remember, the programme will begin repeating in just over an hour's time on The Players. Have a lovely weekend, and I'll see you soon. Bye for now. Leaving you with John Lydon and Pill, and the appropriately entitled Rise. Rise, everybody.